It's finally here, everyone. The 2024 USL season has officially kicked off. Welcome to All Talk, All USL, Talk USL, covering all the latest scores, news, and developments in the second highest division of the United States men's professional soccer system, the USL Championship. I'm your host, Vince Galvano, and yes, we are here. The long wait is finally over. March 9th, the calendar hit. And it was go time. USL kicked off in flashing lights right out of the gate with New Mexico taking on Pittsburgh, as well as Memphis taking on Las Vegas Lights. Plenty of to get into. I mean, obviously covering the latest scores, a whole match day to go along. It's finally here. I'm at a loss for words. I'm so excited. Plenty to remember from this first match day, including a goalkeeper getting a last minute goal to tie things up. Oh man, some new players getting their first taste of USL action in the league that we can get a chance to talk about, and I don't even know where to start. Actually, I do know where to start. This is how we're going to go with things. This is how things are going to go, I should say, with the show. We're going to have a nice match day spotlight each week where you can really delve in. One of the games that I was able to watch this weekend was New Mexico against Pittsburgh. The rest I was able just to catch up via highlights and reading about the stats and the scores. So we'll go into the spotlight match first of New Mexico, and then we'll break down each fixture from what had transpired over the game week. And then at the end, we'll take a look at what fixtures we have for the next match week. So I had the chance to watch, obviously, New Mexico United take on Pittsburgh Riverhounds. Over 11,000 fans coming out to attend the home opener at Isotopes Park. And there was live music before the game. Pancakes were being handed out, I saw in the stories for New Mexico. And even a proposal between two New Mexico United fans in the tailgating prior to going in. So congratulations to the couple that did get engaged. And also a big congratulations for the fact that New Mexico were able to get the win 1-0 against Pittsburgh Riverhounds. It would have been interesting had it went the other way around. So I'm happy for that couple as well. Also, those that were the first fans going into the stadium, they were getting some free swag with a nice yellow New Mexico United flags that we had seen waving about in the stands throughout the game. I just feel it's the most appropriate way to start something so American such as the USL Championship on the fact that New Mexico United are playing on a baseball field. But what's very interesting, I mean, the field itself is sitting up a mile above sea level in elevation. And it just occurred to me, you know, throughout the game, I'm always curious to see, okay, how is this home field? So is it an advantage for New Mexico? I mean, obviously they played it and we'll get into it, but I was just curious, you know, what was New Mexico's home record last season? And I found out, you know, most wins of their last season came at home. 9 out of a total 13 wins came at home last season, meaning they only won 4 times on the road. In terms of losses, 5 losses at home last season with 9 losses coming away at last season. So you could tell New Mexico United, they know how to play on their own home field. It's a significant advantage to them, and it's difficult for any visitor coming over to Isotopes Park to try to get a result. I mean, before going into essentially what the game was, I was really keen on seeing a couple of players in terms of how they perform, one of which was Marco Micheletto, the Italian-American who made his debut over the weekend for New Mexico United. This coming from USLChampionship.com, looking at the top 11 new joiners to keep our eyes peeled out for in the new 2024 season. It reads, Marco Micheletto will make his USL Championship debut this season 5 years after he joined professional ranks as one of South Georgia Tormenta FC's initial signings for the 2019 USL League One season. In that span, he became one of the top players in League One, earning all League One honors in both 2020 and 2021, and over the past 2 years, led Columbus Crew 2 to the first MLS Next Pro title and a second final appearance a season ago. The 25-year-old's creativity in the final third is likely to be key for New Mexico United this season as the side aims to find another level under new head coach Eric Quill. Having notched 16 goals and 4 assists for Columbus Crew 2 as an attacking midfielder, a big opportunity for Micheletto to shine in front of one of the most passionate fan bases in the league. And it certainly was. 11,000 fans a little bit more than 11,000 fans turned out for the home opener of New Mexico United hosting Pittsburgh. Looking at Pittsburgh prior to this game, they lost Albert Dikwa, who was the Golden Boot winner in 2023, as we know, for the USL Championship. And then Bob Lilley, the head coach who had won 2023 USL Coach of the Year, get this stat, made it to the playoffs for six consecutive seasons in a row with Pittsburgh. USLChampionship.com also pointed out, in terms of the new joiners, Kaiser Sterling from England as a player to watch, who's a forward, hoping to fill the big boots that Albert Dikwa has left vacant. Unfortunately, though, Sterling was not part of the squad roster for the first game, and it showed. But just a little insight on Sterling from the USL Championship top 11 new joiners to look out for. Over the past two seasons, there might have not been a more consistent forward in USL League One than Kaiser Sterling, who makes the move to Pittsburgh Riverhounds Soccer Club from South Georgia Tormenta FC, having won the league title in 2022 and having bagged 30 goals in the past two campaigns. He is a former Tottenham Hotspur forward, tops the list in strike rate, averaging a goal every 119 minutes, as well as shooting accuracy of 66.7% and a shot conversion rate of 25.6%. I know it's a big ask to replace reigning championship Golden Boot winner Albert Dikwa, but there's potential here for Sterling to succeed. Unfortunately, didn't have the chance to showcase himself in the first game. Hopefully he can get back out there and make his debut the next time Pittsburgh play. Elsewhere for Pittsburgh, it was great to see Kenardo Forbes out there, the Jamaican international, could become also the all-time leader in regular season appearances in the USL this season, so hoping for that as well. Okay, getting back into the game, as I had said, the field itself, getting used to the terrain, and it showed. So playing on the baseball field, I can see right off the bat that it was also quite dry. And in terms of just getting used to the terrain, it's something that a former college coach had taught me to do and also, you know, preached about and advocated for throughout the season or throughout the tenure that I also had him as a coach. When warming up on a field, anywhere you go, whether it's the home field or away field, but particularly when traveling on the road, it's vital during the warm-up to get a sense of how the ball moves on the field. And I like to do this as well. And if I don't get to do this prior to a game, warming up when playing, it takes me a while to get into the game. I need more touches on the ball than usual. But if I can find a partner and just take 10 minutes and pass the ball, curling it, you know, putting a little backspin on it, letting it bounce to see how the terrain acts and how the ball interacts with the terrain, I feel that I'm ready to go then, because I can anticipate what the ball will be like as the game kicks off. That being said, looked quite difficult for Pittsburgh to get used to what was the game, what was the field they were playing on. Meanwhile, New Mexico, it was something that they're used to all the time, right? So in terms of the stats for the game, possession went out for 66% for New Mexico, 34% for Pittsburgh, five shots on target for the hosts, with two shots on target coming from Pittsburgh. If you take a look at some of the touches in the opposition box, which I always like to look at in terms of stats to see essentially how active each opposition is in each opposition's box, right? 15 touches for Pittsburgh, and then nine touches in the opposition box for New Mexico. Starting things off, and we'll break this game down, first half going on to the second, and then a little bit of recap towards the end. When this game started, Pittsburgh came out like a house of fire. Let me say that again. Pittsburgh came out like a house of fire, getting several corners in the opening minutes and pressing high. And it was troublesome. I thought really that Pittsburgh were going to get an early lead during the beginning of the game. But once New Mexico United got past that, you could see they started to settle in. And I mean, they made the field big, and they were not afraid of possessing the ball. I know there was one instance in the back when they were just knocking it around and a pass went wayward and they gave up a corner kick to Pittsburgh. One of the only corner kicks that they had throughout the game, or it was the eight corners for Pittsburgh throughout the game. So one of the eight came from a mistake passing out the back, which took place in the beginning of the game. But I mean, they still weren't afraid of possessing the ball and really stretching Pittsburgh out. Pittsburgh were playing in a 4-4-2 low block, while New Mexico were playing in that 4-1-4-1. And you can see what they were trying to do. They were really trying to suck Pittsburgh in and then play the long diagonal ball. I mean, when you have dry terrain, you know the field, right? You can play those long balls and they're not going to drift wayward and they're not going to run on like as if it were a slippery surface or as if it was turf, right? With the dry terrain, once you play a long ball, there's a better chance for it to slow up and one of your wingers or the person running onto it will be able to catch up to it. That being said, I mean, making the field big, not being afraid of possessing the ball, Marco Micheletto was fundamental to that. You know, when Pittsburgh swinging a 4-4-2, you know what to expect. Compact. They kept the line quite well for the majority of the first half. But Micheletto, once he started to get on the ball and become more comfortable playing with his teammates, the game settled in. New Mexico started dominating possession. And things really started to tick off of that. And the first big chance came to Reyes when it fell to him at the top of the box. But the goalkeeper, Dick, made the save for Pittsburgh. And that was around the 25-minute mark. And I was just looking at the stats then. It was 75% possession for New Mexico, 25% for Pittsburgh. You know, the four corners that they had up to the 25-minute, one coming off the mistake, as I mentioned. But I mean, it was like Pittsburgh had a solid low block setup, but really nothing else going for them. And that was really the way it was going throughout the course of the first half. And I was really, really, really it was cool to see not just Micheletto, but Jacobo Reyes as well. Reyes, who looked great moving off the ball. And it just freed up space for Micheletto. And he was great. Reyes was just so good at anticipating where the space was in between the lines to get a hold of the ball. In addition to that, I was really, really pleased to see what I saw with Greg Hurst leading up to it, the Scotsman. He was very slippery, very lean. I mean, to play as a lone striker and not be maybe as physical, but have more of just that lean body type that you can just make runs in between the lines, right? And that's what he did. He was using that figure of his to wiggle in and out of pressure and flick things on or to try to win a foul here and there. He reminded me, especially with the blonde hair, now that he's done the blonde hair in this season, of a buffed up version of Samu Castillejo, if you know the Valencia player, a former Milan player as well. Where is Samu Castillejo playing right now? I'm actually kind of interesting. Samu Castillejo. He's playing for Sassuolo right now. Okay. Yeah, former Valencia player, now playing for Sassuolo in the Serie A. In any case, he reminded me of him a bit. And in the 43rd minute, I was thinking that, you know, New Mexico needed to bring their possession a bit up the field, right? Try to maintain possession in the final third. Pardon the pun, but pit Pittsburgh Riverhounds back a bit more in their final third and then see if they can thread the needle in and out. And that's essentially how the first goal happened. So, I mean, the ball got cleared out a bit. Then it was a short foul. It was a foul. New Mexico played it quite quick. Micheletto was able to find Reyes, and then Reyes slipped Hurst in, and then there was a beautiful rollover past the goalkeeper, Dick, the left foot, and then hits it with the outside of the right foot right in front of the fans, and it was New Mexico 1, Pittsburgh Riverhounds 0 at the half. I mean, second half, nothing really to separate the two sides. Pittsburgh up the tempo again to start off. It was interesting to see New Mexico United going short on their first corner in the second half. So you can see they made these little adjustments since in the first half. Their corners weren't working out so well in the box since Dick kept coming out and getting a hand to it. And I mean, what else could we say about the second half that I saw? There was one instance where I would say Pittsburgh got away with murder on the handball that wasn't seen prior to Hurst almost getting a breakaway. It was a foul. It got drawn back. But I mean, for the most part, the middle third was being played in. Not much going on. I think once the subs came on for Pittsburgh, we started to see a little bit of a change. Harris had some nice speed on the outside. In the 80th minute, on the left side, you put it to the byline and then cross it into Hernandez. But the header went wayward, and that was off a nice spell of possession. Some of the nicest soccer that I've seen at that point from Pittsburgh over the course of the game. But still, New Mexico United, they looked comfortable. And it was interesting more so to see that in the second half, Micheletto, instead of being the deep-lying playmaker in the 4-1-4-1, he moved up and played in the center midfield spot in that line of four. And then they had, I think it was one of the midfielders. New Mexico had Zico Bailey coming back in and playing more of the holding role in that second half. And I think that was just smart. You know, little adjustments like that from New Mexico that I was, you know, quite adamant about seeing, because it just gave you a chance to really just have an anchor in there as opposed to a bit of a playmaker, right? Just to protect the back line as the game progressed and as the minutes were waning down. In the 85th minute, Kitza had a nice header, and then in the 88th, there was a half chance from the corner. That was a shot of Pittsburgh. But otherwise, New Mexico were able to come out with the 1-0 win. I think no Kaiseiah Sterling for Pittsburgh was a Debbie Downer, per se. I'd be very interested to see how he performs once he makes his club debut. I wouldn't be too concerned from Pittsburgh. Obviously, just the first game of the season. Tough atmosphere and tough terrain to go to. I think it was just kind of New Mexico's game. And they looked very, very comfortable playing in front of their passionate home fans. And that was really that for New Mexico taking on Pittsburgh. But I really enjoyed it. It was, especially the first half, highly eventful. It was great to see New Mexico play. I really enjoyed watching Marco Micheletto. And if you have a chance next time you watch New Mexico, he's really, really a joy to watch. Chris Hurst, the color commentator for the game, said it best in the first half. It was his game. And we were all just playing it. He was having fun out there. And I think the rest of his teammates knew it. And they just kind of, you know, revolved around and picked up his vibes. In the first half, he made a beautiful chance. I would say a beautiful dribble. The ball was bouncing in the middle. I think it was in the middle of the first half. And it was a little bit of pressure, but just to make sure that he was safe, he popped the ball up about 20 yards in the air, settled it down so nicely, and then played it back. So it was offensive awareness, knowing where the opposition is, right? Winning fouls when fouls needed to be won. And that's something that I like to see from midfielders, especially when they're in the creative, such as Micheletto was. Okay, that was New Mexico. That was Pittsburgh. Also, congratulations again to the couple who got engaged. And it was great that they can have a victory to celebrate even afterwards, in addition to their newfound engagement. Let's take a look at some of the rest of the fixtures. Shifting over to Memphis, 901 FC taking on Las Vegas Lights. At home, Memphis were able to get the victory 2-1 against Las Vegas, but it was Valentin Noel, the Frenchman, getting the first goal of the USL 2024 campaign. It was a really nice strike. Bennett created the space for him. He brought onto his left outside of the box and just shot it low. So, I mean, kudos to Las Vegas in the sense of getting the first goal of the 2024 campaign. But, I mean, it just wouldn't prove to be enough. Rest of the goals from Memphis came in the first half in the 33rd minute from Arega, and then Pickering in the 44th to seal the deal. So Memphis would go on to win 2-1, starting their season with a victory. In addition to Memphis getting a victory, we had Miami FC getting a victory 2-0 over Colorado Switchbacks. Antonio Nocerino gets a debut victory as the coach of Miami FC with goals from Booth and a penalty from substitute Botta. I think it's always nice, especially for a coach when making a debut, or any coach in general, that when you make a change or an adjustment, you take out some personnel and it pays off in the way of a goal or an assist. It's always an extra special feeling. Colorado, on the other hand, I think they'll feel hard done by. They hit the woodwork twice in the first half, and it just seemed like one of those days where the ball doesn't go into the net. They did have 21 shots over the course of the 90 minutes. Meanwhile, Miami had 10 shots. When you look especially in touches in the opposition box, 38 for Colorado Switchbacks compared to 13 from Miami. They did have the fair share of the ball as well, Colorado, with 60% possession against 40%. I wouldn't be too concerned. Just didn't go for them. Maybe on another day, let's say those balls, they don't hit the woodwork, but instead find a way to hit the back of the net, and Colorado will maybe have a better chance at getting the 3 points, as opposed to feeling hard done by here in the 2-0 loss to Miami. Then we had one of our big marquee matchups taking place between North Carolina, newcomers into the league, against Charleston Battery. And these two teams had the honor of being the first USL Championship clubs to feature on CBS Sports Golazo Network, renewing the Southern Derby, which has a history that stretches more than two decades. I mean, North Carolina, as we know, new to the league this year, but unfortunately no goals could separate the two, and only one shot on target over the course of the game. Charleston Battery will feel happy, though, that Aaron Malloy impressed, and he was awarded Foot Mob's Man of the Match, winning 8 out of 8 of his duels and completing 89 passes for a total pass percentage completion rate of 91%. Just a couple of stats there. And if you're interested to know where I'm getting all these stats, there's the app Foot Mob. I really recommend it. It's a great companion for your games. Dive deeper into what's going on, player ratings and so forth. You can add notifications on who scores and so forth. That's Foot Mob. You can find it on the Play Store as well as we have the Play Store and the App Store. Yeah. You can find it on any App Store, FOTMOB. So that was North Carolina and Charleston. We'll keep going here as the games were just going over one after the other. San Antonio FC taking on Loudoun United. This would end in a 2-2 draw with also a 90th minute goal. A little bit over 7,000 in attendance at a Toyota Field. It was Florian Vallon, the Frenchman, rescuing the point in the 90th minute plus stoppage time. But San Antonio will be happy that they had two assists for Hernandez, who won the Man of the Match award, according to Foot Mob. Loudoun United also received the first red card of the season, with midfielder Francois picking it up from Haiti. Elsewhere, goals came from Silva and Agudelo. That was Hernandez helping them out, scoring their goals. Besides Valo in the 90th, we had Ryan getting the goal in the 18th for Loudoun United. So a 2-2 draw, nothing to separate the two teams. Then we shift over to a little bit of the East-West showdowns. Starting first with Hartford Athletic heading over to face El Paso. And then we'll touch a little bit upon Birmingham Legion FC visiting the defending title holders, Phoenix Rising. So those were some fun interconference matchups that took place on Saturday nights. Obviously, both visitors looking to make big statements out of the gate. And that's exactly what would happen. El Paso Locomotive would fall to visitors Hartford Athletic 1-0. It was a penalty from Romario Williams in the 13th minute. That was all that was needed for Hartford to grab all 3 points. Hartford will be very happy considering they lost and drew against El Paso last season. So, I mean, good to them. Kudos to them for getting some retribution on opening day. El Paso, listen, I mean, they play two games coming up, one of them 14th of March this Thursday against Monterrey Bay FC. And then I think their next game comes shortly after taking on Louisville City on the 16th of March. So they have, you know, back-to-back games. So to get one loss, not the best way to start out in front of your home fans, but you're going to be right at it very, very soon to see if you can get some retribution for yourself. I think the bigger loss came in Phoenix. Defending champs Phoenix Rising would fall to Birmingham Legion, albeit off an own goal, 1-0 the final score for the visitors, Birmingham Legion. This coming from OurSportsCentral.com. The defending USL Championship title winners, Phoenix Rising, drew the 8th largest crowd with an attendance of 8,187 and the 8th season of its franchise history. Rising controlled the beginning of the second half, but it was Birmingham that took a 1-0 lead in the 67th minute when Diba Nwegwo fired a shot towards the back post from just outside the top corner of the box. Phoenix goalkeeper Rocco Rios Novo had it covered as it rocketed towards the back post, but the shot took a deflection on its way through the area, and the ball dribbled past the goalkeeper at the near post to make it 1-0 in favor of the visitors. Rising pressed for an equalizer late, but Van Okel owned this night, finishing the match with 8 saves for Hartford and 2 punches to secure the shutout on the road against the defending champions. Yeah, not the best way to start out, especially with one of the largest crowds that it's had in recent memory at the club. So they'll be looking to get some payback big time in their next fixture. I would not want to be the team playing Phoenix coming up next, because to lose on an own goal on opening day, definitely not the way that they had envisioned it. Oakland Roots Soccer Club would host Indy 11, and Oakland Roots would take care of business in a 2-1 win. Jeziel Sedeno, the Ecuadoreño, and Brian Tamacas, the El Salvadoreño, would get the goals for Oakland Roots. Sedeno's goal coming in the 3rd minute, Tamacas in the 50th minute. For Indy 11, it was the Englishman Jack Blake scoring right before the cusp of the end of the first half. 5,000 in attendance at Pioneer Stadium. Congrats to Oakland Roots for getting the job done and getting the 3 points on opening day. Then we shift attention to one of the other marquee matchups that was also on CBS Sports Golazo Network at Hart Health Park. That was the California Classic between Sacramento Republic FC and Orange County Soccer Club. This was the 27th meeting between the two sides. And this was probably the most interesting game from the opening weekend. Also, I have to give a shout out to Orange County Soccer Club. They had their County Road Hummel Kit debut in honor of the Orange County Ultras. It was a beautiful, beautiful jersey, black jersey with orange trim, showcasing the map of the county over it. They look really, really nice. Anyway, this game would end as a draw, a 2-2 draw, which is second 2-2 draw that we had in opening game week. I always love a 2-2 draw because I feel it's one of the most entertaining games to watch, especially as a neutral, because so much can happen. You can have a team go up 2-0, and then all of a sudden they forfeit that 2-0 and they tie it up 2-2. You can have leads exchanging blows throughout the game. One goes 1-0, then 1-1, then 2-1, then 2-2. So it's always a great dynamic, and it's always great to be in attendance for that. But for those that were in attendance, especially the traveling Orange County Soccer Club fans, it was the goalkeeper Colin Shuttler rescuing a point in the last second of the game, pretty much coming off from a header on a corner kick. I mean, who would have thought? Attendance at 11,500 roughly. And it looked like a really, really eventful game. I mean, to cap it off with a goalie scoring on opening day, the first ever goalkeeper to score in Orange County Soccer Club history. Now, looking at the stats here, it was 12 shots for Sacramento to the 7 of Orange County, 5 shots on target to 3. If you look at some of the significant moments, I should say, Orange County did hit the woodwork once over the course of the match, a total of 7 yellow cards in the match, so quite chippy affair between the two sides. But what a way to wrap up a 2-2, wrap up a point, I should say, that Colin Shuttler was able to come up from the back and get a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful goal. In the post-match interview on social media, Colin Shuttler was talking about how he used to play striker, and he was always taught to head it down. And he did. He certainly did head it down, but he also headed it into the back of the net. It was hysterical if you look at it from the goalkeeper's point of view, because it looked like as if he was making a save. It just he was using his head instead to parry it towards the goal. So kudos to him. A Sacramento Republic, it's tough points to drop at home against Orange County. Other notes on match day one, only 2 of the teams, home teams, would go on to lose, and that was ironically the 2 interconference matches, having Phoenix losing to Birmingham, and then we also had El Paso losing to Hartford, both on ironically 1-0 losses. But a very exciting match day one. Monterey Bay FC will open its season coming up this Thursday, March 14th, against El Paso at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Then on Saturday for match day 2, things will be interesting because Louisville City FC, Detroit City FC, Tampa Bay Rowdies, FC Tulsa, and Rhode Island will make its debut in the USL Championship, all awaiting to play their first game in addition to Monterey Bay. So on Saturday, March 16th, we'll have El Paso taking on Louisville. That mentioned to be at 2 p.m. Loudoun United FC will take on North Carolina FC at 3 p.m. Memphis 901 FC will take on Indy 11 at 3 p.m. Rhode Island would make its debut in the USL Championship at 3 p.m. hosting New Mexico United. On March 16th, We'll also have Miami FC continuing its home spell of games, taking on visitors Sacramento Republic FC at 6 p.m. Pittsburgh Riverhounds will look to seek and get retribution for their opening day loss against New Mexico. They'll host Orange County Soccer Club. That game will also take place at 6 p.m. Tampa Bay then will go on to take on San Antonio FC at 6:30 p.m. Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC will host Detroit City FC, who will be looking to make their first game in the USL Championship 2023. Las Vegas Lights will host FC Tulsa at 7 p.m. And then at 9 p.m., we'll have a doubleheader with Monterey Bay taking on Phoenix Rising. Oakland Roots would also take on Charleston Battery at home. Plenty to look forward to. The wait is over, albeit for most of the teams, most of the fans, five teams left to still play their first game of the 2024 campaign. But just want to take a moment to give you a call to action to all the listeners out there looking in ways and how we can improve. I always welcome feedback. So please, please, please let me know your thoughts on the show and the structure. You know, what are you enjoying? What would you like to see more of? What would you like to listen to more of? I'm interested also to know about your listening habits. Are you listening to the show on the way to work? Are you listening to the show when you're taking a shower? I don't know. Do you have it on when you're cooking, for instance? Let me know and write me an email at talkuslchampionship@gmail.com. I'd be very, very keen to hear your thoughts and look for ways in which how we can improve this thing going forward, but also to know a little bit more about what you like from the show thus far. Because I'm excited to do this. I've been enjoying it. It's really fun to connect with all listeners out there on the social platforms and see how we can go on this journey together and keep working towards something special. Anyway, that'll do it for Match Day 1 Recap. Thanks for listening. Talk USL is everywhere podcasts are available and can be found on all social media platforms with the handle @TalkUSL. And if you want to support the podcast, make sure to give a review on whatever platform you're using to listen. This has been All Talk, All USL, Talk USL, covering the latest scores, news, and developments in the USL Championship. Bye for now. Talk soon, everyone. Bye-bye.